Chapter 2. Within an hour, Time's frustration was on the rise, as not even so much as an old shack marred the human free terrain ahead or to either side of her southwesterly trek. She found herself seriously regretting not having simply turned back around after the extremely weird episode and headed back to her disabled ride to spend the night. She might have ended up hungry in the morning, sure, but she'd have had all day to make it back to the previous highway turnoff, where she was fairly certain she recalled having seen what had looked like a working gas station. The desert got cold at night, even in warm weather. This she knew, but she hadn't planned for it. Several bad decisions in a row. That's how she'd gotten there, and it was a scary place to be as the sun crept westward at what was by then a distinctly ever-quickening pace. She guessed she had about 2 to 3 hours of daylight left, and likely less than that if the bank of dark clouds toward which the sun was heading continued to come her way. That it did. She ended up with at least partial cover from the thankfully brief thunderstorm that came an hour or so later. But it wasn't all that dignified sitting under the last remaining corner of an old underturned ranch wagon while the ground around her grew saturated with hard, splashing rain and even a couple of little waves of hailstones. In the aftermath of the fast-moving storm, the late afternoon sun came out and turned the hail that remained into a glittering sea through which she continued on for a few minutes before the little diamond-like ice balls finally melted to puddles. The sun gave out an hour or so later, slipping below the uneven western horizon, which only appeared even farther away in shadow than it had in daylight. On the potential plus side, in the last of the twilight, she was pretty sure she could make out a number of unnatural-looking silhouettes a couple of miles ahead that almost had to be buildings of some kind. She took out her phone for the first time in more than an hour and tried it again. Nothing doing. This was truly nowhere. Focused on the screen, Time didn't notice the truck lights that were already casting her elongated shadow ahead of her on the cracked pavement, and the pickup's lights and windshield were covered in so much dirt that neither the driver nor the passenger saw her until the vehicle's grille was already towering over her from behind. She'd been ambling along down the middle of the right lane, and with her relatively dark outfit, the surprised driver only saw her at the last possible second, and thus had to floor the brake pedal and twist the wheel sharply to avoid running her over. She heard the engine at that last moment, twisted around and realised her peril, and jumped clear. Though even with both parties doing their best to avoid collision, the truck's front end still hit her left foot, stripping her shoe away and sending it flying as she went tumbling down into the stony roadside ditch. The pavement was still wet and, with accumulated dust turned to a thin layer of mud, extremely slippery. Lacking traction, the side-skidding truck tyres screeched along as the mud-coated relic went into the other lane. Had the tyres hit any sort of ridge of resistance, the vehicle would likely have tumbled. Fast as it had been going, way too fast for those ineffectual headlights, it would probably have rolled more than once. Time saw it come to a fortunately upright halt from where she'd landed. Lying on her scraped belly atop sharp stones, she felt little of the damage at first. The driver's side door flew open immediately, and a tall, wiry male figure came racing her way.
"Oh, shit! Are you okay?"
the driver said, drawing up and immediately dropping to a knee beside her. Someone else was climbing out of the vehicle's other door, but Time couldn't see much around the man's intervening body other than getting a glimpse of the passenger door swinging open.
"Is she okay?"
the passenger said, stopping just outside her door.
I think so," Time said.
"We are so sorry,"
the driver said, sounding genuinely scared.
"I didn't see you until the last second. I'd have had the bright lights on, but one of them's out and you can't drive that way or you get a ticket."
Time wasn't quite okay. Her left ankle hurt to put weight on it, and she was bleeding in several spots. Apparently a couple in their late 20s to early 30s, the owners of the grimy truck continued to earnestly apologise and try to help her out, and their insistence, not to mention the thought of limping on in the desert night, what by then had no doubt become a long, odd search for decent shelter, finally combined to get her to concede to Iona and Hector's offer of aid and shelter. With Iona sitting next to her boyfriend or husband or whatever he was, they hadn't said, Time ended up with the passenger door at her shoulder. He was still out looking around for her lost shoe when Iona turned on the cab's inside light.
Oh my God, she said as it revealed the chewed up condition of Time's bare foot. I thought you said we just clipped it.
You did, Time said. She was working to pull off the other shoe, and as it came off, she brought that equally raw-looking ankle and foot into the light. Not the best shoes for an all-day trek through the desert.
Oh, jeez, that looks awful. How's your ankle?
Hurts some, Time said.
I don't think it's too bad. More of an ache already.
Well, Iona said,
we're only about 15 minutes down the road. Stay with us so we can keep an eye on you to make sure you're really okay. I mean, yeah, you say you didn't hit your head so you can't have a concussion, but what if the concussion messed up your memory of the impact?
Time didn't argue. She asked if Iona had a phone. Iona said they had cell reception at their place and she was welcome to use it when they got there. Time asked about the local hotels, politely as she could by saying she didn't want to impose. But Iona would have none of it. Neither would Hector, as he returned with the flung shoe, which, above and beyond the ring of smeared blood at the top, also looked scuffed beyond salvage. In fact, they insisted Time take their bedroom, saying they had a pull-out couch bed. Biding her time to feel them out a bit more, Time let them drive her while she sorted things out.
I'm just curious, she said when they'd gone a couple of miles. You're taking your chances with something this old and beat up, aren't you?
I'm a mechanic, Hector said. The chassis is old, but the engine ain't. Listen to her hum. Oh, okay. Time waited a few seconds. So why is the truck so dirty you can't see where you're going? She saw Iona turn and look at her guy. He didn't do likewise. He just kept staring straight ahead through that windshield, which looked like it had been covered in chocolate milk and wiped with a rotting cloth.
Bad judgment, he said. When you loan an old treasure to a needy friend, make sure you know that needy friend better than we did ours. Long story, but it ends with us both getting a ride to where our friend left it, and being stuck having to trust it to get us back home.
Wow, sorry.
So's he, Iona said.
What do you mean? Time said. Misunderstanding? And of course still apprehensive. Iona swiveled around to her.
Oh no, she said. I'm just saying he's pretty sorry overall. You know, like a rough case.
We didn't shoot him and leave his body for the vultures out here in the nowhere, if that's what you're thinking.
Vengeance is pointless. Iona and me, well, we're just trying to get by.
With as little interaction with civilization as is humanly possible, Iona said. As it turned out, they both obviously meant it. The house was a distinct improvement over the ride to it in terms of both appearance and comfort. A decently large ranch style that sat alone a few hundred feet down a gravel road. In addition to solar panels galore, the place featured deep well water and was almost off the grid. She turned down the offer of their bedroom and took the couch bed instead after showering and patching herself up. She had a couple of bad leg gouges and her ribs had gotten a rough, nasty scrape on the right, but at least she could hobble around on the twisted or sprained ankle with minimal wincing, and nothing else seemed to be seriously damaged. The night passed uneventfully, which of course came as a great relief, but it took a while for Time to doze off, and her sleep was intermittent, broken from time to time by unfamiliar sounds, like a couple's dog scratching at the door, and a noisy but thankfully distant-sounding coyote. And thoughts of that utterly bizarre phone call. So she was a little sleepy and out of it when she finally opened her eyes to morning light and the clinking of dishes in the next room. Having gone almost 24 hours and a lot of walking since her last meal, the sound of food being made was enough to get her out of bed. Apparently, Iona didn't have to be at work until noon, and Hector, whatever he did, didn't have to be anywhere at all. Since he worked on vehicles, he volunteered to not just take her back to hers, but go there prepared to fix it if possible. But since she couldn't tell him anything more than it quit running and the check engine light came on, even he admitted she might as well use her insurance to make sure it got taken care of quickly and without risk. She thanked him for the offer, got hold of the number on her card and, after a pretty decent breakfast made by Hector, left with him in that rough-looking pickup to return to her vehicle, where the tow truck was already headed. Time couldn't help but stare out the slightly less dirty passenger window at the old gas station and that long-dead phone as they passed by. And though she debated mentioning it to Hector during the remainder of their relatively short drive, she ended up keeping all that weirdness to herself. "Looks like this guy has got you covered," Hector said. "The outfit's okay. You should be fine." "I can't thank you enough," Time said. "For running you over? I hope that limp goes away quick." "Thanks again. And no problem. I was the one in the dark outfit trolling along at night on an unlit road. I think my ankle will be fine." "That's great," Hector said. "Look, Time, it was great meeting you under any circumstances. You ever need anything, even getting off the grid for a while? Well, you know where we are." She thanked him again and got out of the truck. And as she headed up to her car, and the tow truck that had parked just ahead of it on the shoulder, she heaved a little sigh of relief that she had made it through that encounter with an obviously fringe living couple. After all, those, these days, might just as easily turn out to be deranged killers.